Hey, it's Melvin, one of your friendly neighborhood podcast hosts. Whether it's your first time tuning in or you're a longtime listener, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. Reviews are the lifeblood of the podcast world, so if you want to help us out, it'll take only a moment of your time. Otherwise, we hope you enjoy the show. Hi, my name is Melvin, and get ready to cringe. Welcome to Cinematic Doctrine, a Christian podcast service that seeks to encourage and equip Christians to engage and reform the culture of cinema. In this episode, Daniel and I are talking about Brandon Trost's An American Pickle. This movie was chosen by the lovely patrons who support Cinematic Doctrine with a small monthly donation. For as little as $3, you too can have the opportunity to vote for a movie we discuss at the end of each month by heading over to Cinematic Doctrine's Patreon. A link will be available in the show notes. 2020 has been a year where new movies are hard to come by, but as cinephiles persevere, more movies arrive. This time around, we're checking out a new Seth Rogen-led comedy where we have not one, but two Seth Rogens to enjoy. And whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, well, I guess that's up to you to decide. Even so, Daniel and I head into our discussion on An American Pickle by starting out with some straight-A cringe. Then we get into our immediate experience with An American Pickle and how it was my comfiest movie experience in a while. Then Daniel shares some frustration over how An American Pickle could have been a much better movie, but still stepped away with a few nuggets of joy. Then, after our trivia section, which includes some fun behind-the-scenes special effects tidbits, we dig into the meat of An American Pickle, or I guess the salty brine, and take an extensive look at its often unsuccessful but somewhat chuckle-worthy comedy, as well as discuss the film's commentary on family legacy against modern Jewish culture. If you've heard the last few episodes, you know we're changing things up. Rather than giving you a ton of details on the film right now, we've formatted our episode to include the synopsis, content warning, and call to action in the main discussion of the episode. So without further ado, here's our discussion on An American Pickle. Look at me, Daniel. I'm Pickle Rogan.
Let's not include that. Can we not include that in the episode? That was so awful to hear.
Tell me how awful it was to hear.
I remember you mentioning, like, oh, we gotta do one. And I was, like, kind of half and half on it. And now that I've heard it, I'm like, oh, now I'm 100% against it.
I don't even watch Rick and Morty. I just know I'm supposed to not like it.
I'm going to go on record as saying that I like Rick and Morty. It's really everything around Rick and Morty, though, is just so awful, both fans and people that don't like the fans and the conversation around it. It's low-key worse than the Star Wars thing, where it's like Star Wars has become so impossible to talk about joyfully. Rick and Morty is like that, but it's less known, but it's easily more joyless to enjoy. I've found it a weird relationship with Rick and Morty because when I was in the hotel, it just played every night on Adult Swim, so I'd see the same episode probably 6 or 7 times a week. So I have this weird thing with Rick and Morty now. So, but my point is that was awful. Please never say that again. And if you find it in your heart, I mean, now we can't take it out because we've talked about it for almost 2 minutes, but
I wasn't going to take it out. You can.
It's so terrible. It's so bad. If we make a single derogatory comment about the comedy in this film, I'll just think back to be like, yeah, but nothing was as bad as what we did in the podcast episode. So.
Oh man. So anybody tuning in, we're talking about American Pickle, not Rick and Morty. American Pickle is a film directed by Brandon Trost, written by Simon Rich, who actually wrote the original short story, which is called Sellout. It's featuring Seth Rogen, which everybody seems to know already. If you don't know him from a movie, you probably know him from a really heartfelt YouTube clip that just showed up on my recommended about his talk with the Senate about Alzheimer's. Really interesting. You should Google it.
Oh yeah,
it's a really quite fascinating to watch. And also features Sarah Snook, who is from Steve Jobs and every Calvinist favorite movie Predestination. Synopsis for the film is that a simple Jewish man named Herschel Greenbaum works in a pickle factory in Brooklyn. One day he falls into a vat of brine and stays there, perfectly preserved, for 100 years. He comes back to life and goes to stay with his great-great-grandson, Ben, in contemporary Brooklyn. Snag that from IMDb. Kind of the characteristic of the film is that Seth Rogen plays both Herschel Greenbaum and his great-great-grandson, Ben Greenbaum. Herschel has a beard, Ben does not. Pretty, like, that's kind of the draw for the film.
A real Norbit performance, as we like to say in the business.
Yes, we do like to say that. I like to say that every day, even just unrelated to Seth Rogen playing Seth Rogen.
Yeah. The film has an MPA rating of PG-13, which might be surprising given Seth Rogen's reputation. And it's rated so for some language and some rude humor. Particularly, it has a very Jewish sensibility for comedy. So there's a lot of old-timey slurs and slangs. And some racial, what some would say is some racial stereotyping, which is something I think we'll probably get into in the meat of the episode, so to speak. And obviously, it also expounds some very Jewish viewpoints, and particularly one very important scene as it involves Christian belief systems. As far as the actual language itself, there might be one instance of the F word being said. I don't recall hearing it. And there's also an instance where it's typed out in sort of like a faux spelling of the F word. There's also some drinking of vodka, and there's some mild violence. And there's a scene very early in the film where we see the poor plight of the Jewish people as one of the villages is raided, and there's some CGI blood for that, as well as some CGI rats being murdered. And I think there's also some fist fighting that's very cartoony and Hanna-Barbera in nature. But for the most part, this film is pretty clean. It's pretty... there isn't anything in the movie that made me wince or cringe as far as content goes. And especially as far as the Seth Rogen film, this is borderline his version of a family film, or as close as I think Rogen will ever get in his lifetime. So unless he does that Eddie Murphy, Adam Sandler thing where he suddenly starts making children's films late in his career for whatever reason.
And then he has to perform as a dog.
Yeah.
With Osgood Perkins.
Yeah, he'll make a Shaggy Dog 2 or something.
It'll be awesome. And if you're a fan of the show, Cinematic Doctrine, you can always leave a review on iTunes or Podchaser, wherever you listen. That's always really well appreciated. We always check them out because they're good for letting us know what you guys think. You could even, if you really don't like the show, it's actually one of the best ways you can let us know. But honestly, if you don't like the show, you could send us an email to cinematicdoctrine@gmail.com and let us know, because then, you know, that's a little nicer. You can check out our social media. It's Facebook or Twitter, Instagram. We also have a Facebook group that's pretty active, really fun stuff. We're recording right after DC Fandome. There's a lot of stuff being talked about there. We also got monthly movie news and trailer talk, which are just other movie culture related stuff. So we talk about trailers. We talk about what's kind of been going on in the month with a kind of a byline about the themes going on. In fact, the last monthly movie news we did was on kind of theaters and how they're handling things. I interviewed a local theater in my area to hear how they're doing and how they can be supported, which honestly is probably very similar to how local theaters are handling things in your area. Always check out our website for content, similar content, which is usually just written. So if you just enjoy reading, that's there for you too, cinematicdoctrine.com. And then if you want to support us on Patreon, you know, give us some donations and stuff like that, you can support us for as little as $3. You get exclusive voting privileges on movies we review at the end of each month, just like this one. American Pickle was chosen by our patron supporters. We really appreciate you guys picking this one out. It's pretty close. I thought Boy State was going to land it, which, hey, that would have been cool too. Maybe we'll still talk about it someday, but this is what people wanted to hear, American Pickle. You can also get access to an exclusive podcast show called The Pre-Show, which is just a lot more freeform, where me and Daniel talk about, you know, our faith. We talk about our love of movies or stuff that's just going on in our life. So, you know, just more content for you. Bang for your buck, $3, all accessible at the lowest tier. So one of the new formats that we're trying to do with the podcast is we're going to have a non-spoiler section, a trivia section that tells you spoilers are coming up, and then a spoiler-specific discussion. It's just logistically going to help us out in the show when we're preparing things so that we're not cutting out content in the beginning that just spoils the film. Now we're a lot more comfortable with it. So moving forward, right now, we're going to have some general thoughts on the film without spoilers. So Daniel, what did you think of Seth Rogen's PG-13 totally accessible family film on HBO Max?
So yeah, we sort of jokingly calling this his family film, but it did really remind me a lot of mid to late 80s and then early to mid 90s comedies, which would have a high concept premise or setting, or particularly a lot of fish out of water comedies, and then sort of go from there and have sort of like a standard, almost like a buddy comedy formula, where you kind of don't see movies like this a lot anymore, in this old fashioned thing where they have a completely absurd premise that really doesn't get explained very much. In fact, one of the earliest gags in the film is them just not explaining how any of the logistics of this movie work at all, which I really enjoyed. And then there's from there, they just sort of go into whatever shenanigans they want for the movie.
Is that the scene when he comes out of the vat and they're like, they're sitting in a press room and the scientist is like, he's been perfectly preserved in pickle brine for 100 years. And one of the press people is like, how is that possible? And when the scientist answers, it just cuts away to like narration. And he's like, the science man says things that everyone agrees with. Cuts back and they're like, oh, that makes total sense.
Yeah, that I loved that most because also there is a, for me, I really hate when people demand a movie fully explain its premise because that's not important. Like when I'm hearing a story or when I hear a thing, the how and why is very secondary to what they're trying to do. And in that regard, I really deeply admire what this film is attempting to do as far as the subtext of the film, where there's two things that really improved my experience of watching this movie. The first thing is, before this, I actually listened to, a few weeks ago, Seth Rogen appeared on Marc Maron's podcast to talk about the movie, and for about an hour, him and Marc Maron, and they're both Jewish, talked about the just Jewishness of the movie, for lack of a better term, and how it's very steeped in that experience and that sort of cultural heritage that they have. And seeing all of that in the movie definitely had made softened my heart to it a lot. But also, I also saw a lot of reviews saying the movie wasn't particularly funny, so I wasn't expecting to laugh out loud the entire movie. But the previous movies that we've been watching on the show were like A Ghost Story, She Dies Tomorrow, and I saw Dr. Sleep finally. And so I was very ready for just a semi-normal, conventional Seth Rogen vehicle. So I was like, okay, this isn't particularly complicated. I can almost pay half attention and it makes complete sense. That's fine. But I really was charmed by the movie more than anything. It's never funny. It's more amusing than laugh out loud funny. As I'm sure we'll get into, the plot of the movie is completely, I wouldn't say nonsensical, because it does, it makes sense, but it just keeps going in more farcical directions, and it slowly deviates from the things that I really loved about the movie, to where you're just sort of like, kind of, it's one of those movies, the best way I can describe it is it's so good that you wish it was better, where it's kind of good in so many ways, and there's so many interesting moments and ideas that they bring up and then never expound upon or don't really dig into it so much, that they just sort of start focusing on the more silly elements of the movie. Like there's some very strong early scenes, the first 20 or 30 minutes, where once Seth Rogen's ancestors, I almost keep saying unfrozen, because the movie really reminds you of Encino Man, one of those 90s comedies we're talking about. It's like that mixed with Coming to America, mixed with a bunch of other kind of comedies in that vein, where Seth Rogen and his grandfather and then Seth Rogen and current day are talking. And they're just having this moment where they're juxtaposing the old timiness with modern times, but also just the things about Seth Rogen's ancestors, where family is really important, work ethic is really important. They cling very strongly to their Jewish faith and their Jewish identity and heritage. And he's slowly learning from Seth Rogen's character that in modern Jewish culture, there's a lot of people who don't hold tightly to any of those things. Like, he notes that Seth Rogen's apartment, there's no pictures of his family on the walls. It's just pictures of like David Bowie and, you know, kitschy art and things. They don't have family photos. He has like a family photo album he keeps in his closet somewhere. There's all this talk about how Seth Rogen is a nominal Jew at best. He doesn't know any of the Jewish prayers or anything, though he was confirmed at a young age. And so that stuff is very strong. And then this movie keeps going. It just slowly lets go of those things and gets more and more silly and stupid. And that was very disappointing to me. And though, as we'll get into the spoiler section, as I get closer to the resolution of the film, they bring some of those themes back in a way that I found satisfying. But I was disappointed that it sort of focuses more on what's in theory supposed to be the comedy stuff in the movie, but the comedy's never that funny, so it's just kind of disappointing. But overall, I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would and found it very charming. And especially as just a movie that's on a streaming service, like, don't get an HBO Max subscription or trial just to see this. But if you have HBO Max, it's definitely not a waste of your time. And also, I just got to say up front, Seth Rogen's acting in this movie is actually really good. Like, he fully embodies two separate people in a way that I actually thought is, like, understated. Like, his ancestor's name is Herschel. I'm bad with character names.
Yeah, Herschel and Ben.
Herschel and Ben are two entirely different characters.
Yeah.
And it's very like
they almost have different movements too. He doesn't just talk different. He embodies these characters in completely different ways.
Yeah, and comedic actors never get their due until they have a quote-unquote serious turn. But comedy acting is deceptively difficult. And, like, Kevin James, like, for example, everyone's like, oh, he's so dumb, he's so silly, whatever. But, like, to do, like, physical comedy is not only taxing your body, but it involves a lot of timing. It involves a lot of, like, commitment and reading of an audience and reading of a moment.
Confidence. I always say, like, really good actors are people not afraid to look stupid.
Yes.
And that includes drama, too, because people think you look stupid when you cry, so they don't want to cry. But it's like, if you got to kind of break that down and just be like, it's what the scene calls for, so got to look stupid.
And Seth Rogen definitely doesn't mind looking stupid, but in this movie, he fully commits both these actors. And I just want to say that he's not going to get nominated for anything, but I think he deserves commendation for that. But that's how I felt about it, just giving my early thoughts. But Melvin, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I had a good time. I think charming is a really good phrase for it, because it's one of those movies that the premise alone is what's going to draw you in, because it's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
You're talking about, like, just fish out of water, bizarre things. It made me think of Beverly Hills Ninja with Chris Farley, where it's just like, this is a movie that should not exist, but apparently it's what makes money, so we're just going to make it. And what makes it great about now is these kind of movies don't make money. And so the fact that it exists just makes me happier.
Right.
And then also it's just like, pickles are not like a marketable food. Like, it's these kind of smell, the whole joke about, like, just the brine being so, like, pungent, it burns your throat. Everything about a pickle is, like, disgusting, but also, like, savory to a lot of people. So just the focus on that is just so bizarre. I really wish there were consistent jokes about him just smelling like a pickle all the time, because he's been in brine for 100 years. So the guy's just like, you should just be disgusting right now. But yeah, I mean, all of that's just, like, endearing to me. And it kind of gave me vibes of there's a German film that's very, very it's challenging in its comedy, but it is very funny, called Look Who's Back. Have you heard of this movie?
Yes. Challenging is a good word for it.
So the premise of Look Who's Back is a bolt of lightning strikes a bush and a bunch of German kids go look over, and there's Hitler. And it's not an actor. It is the Hitler. He didn't die. He just appeared out of nowhere. And he walks up to a newsstand, and this journalist sees him and says, hey, nice costume. And it's not a costume. It's the real Hitler. And the rest of the film is about people think it's not the real Hitler. They think it's a performer. It's a very good commentary on, like, German culture, because this was made, I think, just around Arab Spring, when a lot of refugees were coming into Germany. And so it was sort of this, like, foreign Sacha Baron Cohen style film, where part of it is skits and part of it is just put the actor in the Hitler costume out in public and let him do his thing. Very, very different film. I'm sure no one opened up this Jewish film episode on the Cinematic Doctrine podcast and expected to hear Hitler. Although I guess the more cynical people did. But it kind of gave me those vibes, where it's all about this out of time, truly bizarre, and at time having, well, just very different worldviews character moving into the modern age and interacting in that way. Doesn't have the Sacha Baron Cohen style of having Seth Rogen in a very Jewish outfit out in public. They couldn't do that because I think Seth Rogen's pretty recognizable. It kind of reminded me also of Uncut Gems, funnily enough, because Uncut Gems is this film with a very strong awareness of Howard Ratner being a Jewish individual. And so this, which is so bizarre because they're totally different films. Uncut Gems is very serious. And but they both, when you're watching them, you're constantly thinking about, like, the Jewish heritage and culture and stuff like that. So I kind of, like, on my Letterboxd review just said, like, if you liked Look Who's Back and Uncut Gems, you might like this movie. Because, like you said, it's not really particularly funny. It's funny to think about. In fact, I think when we get into, like you can't really talk about funny parts of it because punchlines are spoilers. And going into the movie without knowing them makes it more enjoyable. But like we said, most reviews were like, it's not that funny, but, like, it's still interesting to watch because it does have that really kind of family focused modern Jewish perspective versus classic Jewish heritage balance. And that really keeps the film worth watching. It did lose me a little towards the middle, but by that point, I'm already like, this was a movie I just crawled into bed and put my laptop on and watched it. So I was so comfy, I was going to be okay no matter what happened. So yeah, it's worth watching if you have HBO Max. It's not worth getting HBO Max to watch.
Yeah,
I completely agree with that assessment. And yeah, it was pretty fun.
So you're saying it's good to watch as long as you're laying down in bed and you're super comfy, like half of sleep, and you know, it's a good movie to
schedule to watch the movie like we did because we had to for the podcast. But like, you don't have to get prepared for this. Don't have to pop the popcorn. Don't have to invite friends over. But if you're just sort of like, I just want to watch something and kind of kill some time and have some interesting premise with really fun performances and special effects, it's just it's worth watching. It's not worth getting HBO Max for. It's funny to hear that you said you watched Doctor Sleep, and I'm assuming you watched Doctor Sleep through HBO Max, because I, after watching American Pickle, just watched Scoob. So I probably should have just watched Doctor Sleep. Scoob was very just, well, Scoob was really interesting. It doesn't make any sense. It should not exist. I think we need to talk about that movie purely because of what it is.
Did you see Doctor Sleep, by the way?
I didn't. I think I will. It's one of like three or four films Sean Baker has a list of films he says should have been shot on film. Disappointed they shot on digital. That's about all I know.
I would agree with him in that. So actually, now I think about it, Doctor Sleep would have been great if it was shot. Like, it was a great film to shoot on film.
But maybe, was that a Sony film or I guess Warner Brothers, because it's on.
Yep, Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers on HBO Max. I think Warner Brothers probably saved some money by not shooting on film, because I don't think that film did well in theaters.
It did not do well in theaters, and then after it hit streaming, it got a lot more attention because people were like, "Hey, this is actually really good." I think the name killed it. Like, Doctor Sleep doesn't sound like what it is, which is a sequel to The Shining. So, but you can't just call it The Shining 2, because that's not really accurate.
Electric
either.
Boogaloo.
The squeakquel. Yeah.
But yeah, seems like you got the better deal out of your free trial. But at least we both had a good foundation on American Pickle. So that was pretty good.
I wish I could more enthusiastically recommend it. Because it's overall, I would say I have overall positive feelings towards the movie. But I, like you said, I'm glad things like this exist, because there's something really great about like Seth Rogen and the guy who's the writer. I think he wrote this short story after he talked to Seth Rogen or something like that. But this was born out of like their own personal experiences and ideas. Seth Rogen like based the Herschel character on his own, I think, grandfather or uncle or something like that. And so this is an original idea based. It's a personal story with a stupid premise that like back in the day, the good old days of just maybe 15 years ago, this would have been greenlit. They would have spent $20 million on it and it would just been gone to theaters. And these types of movies are slowly dying out. So I wish I could say, look, this is a great movie. People should watch it so they can support it and they can make more movies like this. But sadly, it's not quite as good as it could be, and it doesn't really live up to the really great potential of its own premise. But still, like you said, and like we both have said, it's worth the watch. I just wish it was a little better.
So now we're going to go into our trivia section. Just be warned, you know, after that, the spoiler warning is going to be lifted. Right now, none of our trivia here is going to have any spoilers in it. At least I'm skimming it to make sure that's the case. Yeah, we're good. No spoilers covered in this trivia. But after the trivia section, that is when spoilers come up, which again, we're really just talking some punchlines and stuff like that. A little bit of commentary too, because this film does have some commentary, which I found also kind of entertaining. As much as like it seems like the family stuff and the Jewish heritage stuff was the strongest draw, there is a light commentary that's actually quite entertaining to go into. But first, let's do some trivia. Daniel, you went ahead and read us our MPAA rating for this movie. So why don't you tell us the first trivia, which is related to our MPAA rating?
So American Pickle is the first Seth Rogen produced film that has not landed itself an R rating from the MPAA. It doesn't feature a scene where Seth Rogen and his friends smoke weed or get high. So that's certainly something worth commenting on, I suppose. I'm trying to think of... if there's now I'm racking my brain for Seth Rogen movies they produce that don't feature anyone getting high, and I think there might in fact not be another one.
So there you go, guys. PG-13. I don't even know if there's Is there a PG-13 film that does have drugs, though? I don't even think so.
I mean, I guess it depends how you define drugs.
Okay, yeah, because alcohol's a drug, and that's sometimes in PG. Well, that's in this movie, so vodka, no less. So, but yeah, we got another trivia here. We got as briefly mentioned before, American Pickle is an adaptation of a short story written by Simon Rich called Sellout, which a hardworking immigrant is preserved by brine. Simon Rich also wrote the script alongside being an executive producer. You can read the short story Sellout in the collection titled Spoiled Brats, which is going on sale for Amazon at $7 USD on Kindle and $10 USD for paperback. So I thought it was funny enough to check out what the source material is, so I might pick it up. I like reading, and I also like to support short story collections because sometimes a story really only deserves a few pages. Maybe American Pickle is one of them. So could have been 40 minutes.
Seth Rogen stated that because synthetic beards often look terrible in films, he grew a real beard for the scenes he performed as Herschel, while body doubles performed as Ben. Then Rogen shaved the beard and had to perform as Ben, which required the cast and crew to ensure the camera placement was in the same place days after the initial Herschel shoot, or by cleverly using green screen. In fact, that brief scene where Herschel and Ben knock over two large branches, those are totally different days of shooting. There is, in fact, a scene during the latter half of the film set during a forested wintry setting with a lot of snow, and from a special feature you can see in HBO Max titled An American Pickle, The Art of Twinning, it seems the Herschel performance took place in the wooded snowy section, while the Ben performance took place in green screen. That way, in post-production, editors can put Seth Rogen as Ben into these snowy scenes with ease, as on account of the fact that snow, in fact, melts.
Yeah, and then you have the profile photo for Seth Rogen as Herschel. I feel like I've said Seth Rogen like wrong every time. It's kind of fun to get names wrong, but anyways. Profile photo for Seth Rogen as Herschel Greenbaum used for the film's poster was taken with a preserved 19th century camera. So that's pretty cute. I always like seeing stuff like that. I always thought, though, with like old cameras, you had to like sit there for a long time to let the shutter close.
Right.
Is that a thing, or am I misunderstanding?
I think it depends on the camera.
Okay. It's just funny to picture that like Seth Rogen had to wear like really heavy clothes for a very long time and just stand there with the same expression. Anyways. So here we are going into our spoiler section. Again, we're just kind of going into some jokes. So if that's something you don't really care about, go ahead and just keep on listening. But if you do care enough about An American Pickle, you were just itching to watch this movie, you want to go into it without spoilers, you're going to want to turn this off now. Otherwise, we are heading into spoilers. So putting Pickle Rogen aside, what do you think, Dan, about some of the more direct commentary that this movie has? I mean, you have Herschel goes off to make his own pickle company, pretty much. And then you start getting into a lot of the more, it's not slapstick humor, but very cartoony stuff.
It's farcical. Like, yeah. People react to things in a very exaggerated kind of way. So, I mean, I mentioned earlier that the stuff that I really enjoyed in the movie is particularly early scenes where what is Seth Rogen's young modern self's name?
Ben.
There's so, you know, Seth Rogen, Herschel gets unbrined, unfrozen, unpickled. I don't know. And so Ben takes Herschel in, and there's these early scenes where, like, there's a great scene where he's going through their family photo album together. Because early on, when you see Herschel in the old times, his goals and stuff is he just wants to be able to afford a few things. He's very poor. The little he has,
seltzer water. Hard.
He really wants seltzer water.
His dream is seltzer water.
His wife's dream is to have her own headstone, to afford her own headstone. He wants to try seltzer water. And so, but he really wants to have a child. And there's a scene where he's like basically praying over his child. As like, you'll be a great man one day, you're going to achieve great things. And then he gets fast forwarded to the future where Seth Rogen's character has things beyond his wildest dreams. He has a machine where he can make any water seltzer water, which is a very cute scene. And he opens up a photo album and just describes Herschel's offspring and how one of them became a foreman, another one became an accountant. And it's a very touching and moving scene where he realizes that his sacrifices and hard work as an adult pays off. And that stuff is really great. And then there's this juxtaposing where he's like, well, what do you do? And Seth Rogen's character isn't really what he would consider a hardworking man. And there's, you know, you could see the commentary and subtext there where it's like Rogen's ancestors worked so hard and sacrificed so much, and they were tough, fortified people, while he lives in what they would consider immense luxury, and he doesn't work nearly as hard as they did.
Right.
And he has abandoned many of the traditions of their faith and things that they held so dear. You know, Rogan's character doesn't seem to want a family, doesn't seem to want kids. And that stuff's really great. And then 45 minutes into the movie, it just sort of deviates where it becomes a thing where Herschel's character starts running his own pickle company, and there's all these jokes about like, oh, is this pickle organic? And he's like, yes, because he's getting pickles out of a dumpster and it's like using rainwater to whatever. And it just becomes this like weird rivalry plot where Rogan starts trying to sabotage his pickle business, but then every time he sabotages it, it kind of blows up in his face. As then it just sort of deviates into a modern commentary about interns and kind of Trump by the end. And you're just like, what happened to the stuff that I liked, you know?
That there was one part that genuinely got a laugh out of me, and it was when Herschel says, like, some... Because he's like from 100 years ago. Very different things were more socially acceptable to talk about. He says something really bigot-like, and it shows some, like, newspaper clippings or articles online, and it's like, Kanye West defends Herschel Greenbaum.
Yeah.
just like, that was so good. That's but, like... Good. That's probably like, well, Mark Kermode has like a comedy litmus test. And it's if you can hit this, if you can laugh six times, it succeeds. And I think that was like my number two time laughing. And it was already like 60 minutes in. So yeah, it does deviate because it has this like, it is interesting to think the juxtaposition you immediately get about like you see when Herschel is praying with his wife about their children. They show like a wide shot of their home and like all the paint's falling off and there's broken furniture and it's kind of just gross and very low income kind of house for like 100 years ago, because they end up immigrating here to the United States from where were they again? I forget what town. Eastern Europe, really.
Yes. Yeah. Eastern European town. Yeah.
Then, of course, you see Ben's apartment. That's the great-great-grandson. And it's perfectly fine. Great paint. He's got computers. He's got David Bowie stuff hanging up. And there's a really funny scene where Herschel's like, is this your father? And Ben's like, no, that's David Bowie. And he's like, so it's your mother? He's like, no, that's also David Bowie. and it's like, well, where is your family? And it's just like, it's got this awareness of heritage. It's got this awareness of family. And I think it tries to cover too much, because by going into a lot of the comedy with Herschel building his own pickle empire and the intern's joke and the bigotry of being like, you're a CEO company. And one of the jokes is Ben wants to bring down Herschel. So he says, you should get Twitter.
Yeah. After he says something horrible at Polish people. He's like, have you heard of Twitter?
And so that he's like, he gets a Twitter and he says things like about how women shouldn't be working and their places at home. And I thought that scene
was very funny.
Yeah, it was clever, because it was like, how do you bring a tech CEO down? Just give him Twitter. It's like that graph. Did you see there's like, it's a subreddit, like knowledge is fascinating. And it was like Elon Musk's Twitter posts from like 2010 to like now. And you just see how much he's posted to like this week, and like, how do you affect the stock market? Be Elon Musk on Twitter. How do you ruin your company? Give Herschel a Twitter. I mean, it just kind of finalizes like there's some sort of like cultural clash stuff going on, and maybe even family dynamics of like Ben doesn't want to be like Herschel, and so he's trying to destroy it. But like, it's a bit too far away from the family subplot to stay connected. And so it doesn't really, like you said, come back until the end, when it gets back to this family story about like heritage and kind of appreciation of that. But
just wanted to say, like, part of what makes that Twitter scene so great is he's dictating it to one of his interns. And so he has to like out loud say.
And it's a young
say,
woman.
Yeah.
It's like, and she's just great actor. Her expressions were fantastic for comedy. I thought she was great.
And she's like, oh, he's like, his tweets are like bizarre, because it's like, He's like, oh, is it somebody who people in wheelchair, like you have been cursed.
Yeah.
But however, though your legs don't work, your mouths work and you will love my pickles. So he's intending these as advertisements.
Yeah.
And he's like, sodomites will burn in hell. Buy pickles. And she's like,
it doesn't work at all. And then
the next scene is like a protest shows up and she's like, I appreciate this internship. I'm sorry. And she hands over a clipboard and then it cuts to her having already joined the protesters. And he's just like, what? And so like, and those are funny, but like, it was, yeah, I chuckled more than I was like, ah, ha, ha, ha. It was like, okay, that's clever. And it was sort of just like, I don't know. But then like you said, these are great jabs, but they're just not at anything. It's just like, how does
they're
this...
not relevant to like, how does yeah. a joke about him using Twitter get related to like the family dynamics?
Right.
And like, the heritage stuff. It really doesn't. It's a funny skit. And in fact, probably the middle parts of the whole second act is just a series of unrelated skits with the same characters.
Well, it makes sense when you learn that the guy who wrote the movie, this is his first major motion picture that he's written. Before this, he was a writer on SNL.
That makes a lot of sense then.
Yeah. So that's his strength. And at the end of the movie, I immediately looked at the runtime and there were 6 minutes left for credits. And the hit, I think it was like 122 minutes was that I was at. So this movie, weirdly, they just couldn't figure out how to fill time. They had like an 80 minute or so runtime. And it's just like, even like this movie feels padded and bloated at like 80 something minutes. And I was just kind of disappointed because it's like, you couldn't really figure out how to fill that time, huh? You had to have some weird convoluted plot where Herschel owns a pickle business, loses it, gets interns, then gets canceled on Twitter, but then becomes more popular than ever because people love the fact he's speaking his mind.
That was so funny.
Yeah, which is like, of course, because I immediately, as soon as he got Twitter, I was like, they're going to do a thing, reset something offensive, but people love it.
Which is very much Look Who's Back, because Look Who's Back is like, the whole premise is people in Germany like Hitler, and even though he's Hitler. And so to me, it was like, that's when I got the most Look Who's Back vibe, because it's this fascinating thing where we are right now living in a time where you can watch people who are very powerful say things that they can afford to say because other people at their beck and call will defend it. And that was a very Look Who's Back kind of thing. And
yeah, it kind of reminded me of the Peter Sellers movie Being There. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I haven't, no.
It's very good. And it's about a guy who he's a simple gardener, but he's been shut in at home his entire life. And he's like now in his like 40s, he's an adult because he's part of a rich family. And then his mother dies or something like that. It's been a while since I've seen it. And so he just sets out on his own. And with his people think he's spouting folksy wisdom, but literally he's just saying the only things he knows, which is gardening tidbits. But he's like, dude, to tend a garden, you need to water it regularly, but make sure it gets sunlight. Everyone's like, wow, this guy really, they think he's speaking great wisdom. He's just talking about gardening. And he ends up being like president.
That's like this, the interview that Herschel in this film has with the one guy. And Herschel,
yeah,
like,
I'm sitting exactly. Room, that's why I'm bringing it up. Yeah.
What are these bright lights? He's like, what are these bright lights?
Yeah, he's like,
what is the
I don't
sun?
Understand what's going on.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
But again, what does that mean to the overall story?
Yeah.
And so like these scenes individually are kind of funny little, like you said, skits. And then it ends with this preposterousness of him at an actual like debate with like someone at a college. It's just like, why did they do this?
He says something very offensive about women. So then there's a debate between him and this popular feminist. And he's just saying terrible things. And everybody's just cheering him on. Up until Seth Rogen says the Christians thing. Until Ben is like, what do you think about Christians? And he says it very sneakily. And Herschel's just like, well, they're all wrong.
Yeah, he says some things like, that if you really believe bad. In Jesus, you're stupid, is literally yeah. how it ends this sentence.
Yeah. And it's like, uh-oh, can't say that in America. And so, yeah, it's What is it? They're just going to deport him because he said something wrong about Christians. Well,
they're going to deport him because, and this is another one of the jokes I thought was actually pretty funny, which is they're like, well, we looked into it. Turns out he doesn't have actual like proper documentation as an immigrant. And they just tried, they find an old like suitcase from Ellis Island that just says the word like Jews on it.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find his papers. I was like, okay, that's like a clever joke.
Yeah.
And I wish there were more of those in the movie. But like even now, you've said like the 10 things in the movie that we thought were funny.
Right. And they didn't make us laugh watching it. Like for me, it didn't make me laugh watching it. It's making me laugh talk about it. But yeah, I was just comfy in bed and Milo's sitting next to me and he's resting fine because I'm not making noise because the movie's not eliciting laughter after, out of me. So,
yeah. And it's it's, I wish that the film's targets and aims were a little more ambitious because, hey, wouldn't someone from 100 years ago say some outdated, what we would consider now bigoted things, isn't a scathing indictment? That's not a hugely like insightful observation.
Right. I mean, Gone with the Wind just had that happen.
Yeah.
It's very clear that older things will have problematic content that people aren't uncomfortable with. Fair enough. Lovecraft Country on HBO Max right now, it's inciting conversation about, yeah, but isn't Lovecraft stories all racist? And then, yeah, so it's like it makes complete sense that it's not new. I think it's fun how they take it because it's very clear that they're aware of those things and then also just putting clever things together. But like it might not be as smart as I want it to be because like the Ellis Island briefcase where all documents about whether or not they're citizens is shoved into a briefcase called Jews is quite funny because it is, but that's about as clever I think that the movie really got. That and the Kanye joke, but even then the Kanye joke is, I mean, it's happening every day.
That's going to be dated in like 6 months. And yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm trying to say is it's like, wow, isn't it funny how people say terrible things on the internet and Twitter, but some people really like that. That's probably the 1,000th time someone's made that observation in modern culture, especially right. As far as like something that's bigoted is, you know, or it's, there's certain things I admire about the film. First off, I admire that they don't overdo the fish out of water. Like, ooh,
thank
TV,
goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, thank goodness.
There's a scene where he's trying to use an iPhone or play video games or something.
I really hate that trope, so I'm really glad that they didn't do that.
I'm glad there's a scene of him using like a Kinect and going, I love modern technology, you know, or something. There's
Xbox gotta get that sponsor in for the Kinect again.
I guess they're checked in clear, so that's why it's not in the movie.
Yeah.
Or like, what is it, in Dark Shadows, that where they, it was like a movie adaptation of like a TV show from the 60s where John Depp plays a vampire and he's like, oh, who's this little man in the box? And he tries to like get the man out of the TV. And like, I'm glad there wasn't any of that in the movie. They do it sparingly in a way that's actually kind of clever or very simple. Like there's a couple throwaway lines where like Seth Rogen's like, oh, look what I'm working on. He holds up an iPad and he's like, oh, wow. Like you invented this. And he's like, no, I'm making an app on this. And yeah. it's a little chuckle joke, but it actually works towards the thing of like, Seth Rogen isn't as accomplished as his ancestors would hope that he is.
Right.
So I think the movie should get points for that. And I also think it should get points for making its racial humor as general and is not as offensive as humanly possible. Like there's nothing in this movie that made me like cringe because it was offensive, because they contextualize it where these are the views of this one character, but at the same time they sort of acknowledge that he's a complicated man. Like there's things about him that are great. Like there's a great scene where Seth Rogen hurts himself, so Herschel like takes time to, like rips his own shirt to bandage up his hand, where it's like, okay, like some things about him are not good. Like the movie doesn't apologize for his viewpoints. It says like these are bad, and it very clearly illustrates him as being bad without ever like trying to like, oh, isn't it funny? He's kind of racist and sexist and homophobic and kind of terrible towards Christians. It doesn't apologize for those things. It just sort of displays him as bad while also showing it. But he's a caring man who loves his family. And the thing that kind of keeps the movie going, even as it sort of goes in all these weird deviations, is Herschel deep down wants to reconnect with his great grandson because they're the only family they have. And that's kind of the thing that's really important to him. So Herschel is a deceptively rounded character, is what I'm trying to say. And I think the movie does a good job of doing that, even if the road there is bumpy and weirdly disjointed. So
So I think in the beginning you said you wanted to talk about something at the ending, which, hey, we're in the spoiler territory. So do you mind getting into that, Daniel?
The thing that keeps the thread on which the whole movie is tied, and the thing that it's a singular kind of thing that elevates this movie over like a movie that if it's on TV and you're in the room, you won't be at a loss for just not changing the channel kind of movie versus one that I think you might get something out of if you actually like choose to put it on is. So like, as I mentioned a couple of times, the stuff early on in the film is some of the strongest stuff. And then it sort of loses me in the middle as it kind of lost you. But then it sort of ties everything back together in the end. And it's the stuff that I wish the movie had focused on a little bit more. But sort of the three big things they established early on is Herschel loves his wife and loves his son and loves his family and just wishes to build a better life for them. And family is one of the most important things to him. And he's also very dismayed when he's talking to Seth Rogen's character, Herschel's talking to his great-grandson, Ben. Thank you. I will get it by the end of the episode. I'll remember it's Ben.
Herschel and Seth Rogen.
Herschel and Seth Rogen. I mean, that's a testament to how good his performance as Herschel is, where I can differentiate him from Seth Rogen. But Ben is sharing that his father and mother actually died in a car accident when he was young. And so Herschel is like, okay, like we need to say these prayers. We need to mourn together. Like we need to bond over our suffering, which is a big thing. And like, just go back to Book of Genesis forward. God's chosen people have had a very rough go of it and they've endured a great amount of suffering and that has made them stronger. But it's also the thing that sort of they have in common with each other is this shared trauma and pain. And Ben just doesn't want to do that. He's like, no, I don't want to. And he actually, when they go to the family plot, it's disheveled. There's billboards for vodka over yeah, it. And yeah. Which greatly upsets Herschel. It's why he starts a pickle business, is just so they can buy the land to take down the billboard. And so like Ben just doesn't want any part of that. He just doesn't want to be part of it. He just sort of in some ways rejects his own culture. And in listening to the interview he did with Marc Maron, Seth Rogen talks about that though he's not religious, though he's a self-described atheist, he says like there's just something there and there's something that we cannot shake and it's in our DNA where this is a part of us. And Seth Rogen says as he gets older, he finds himself more and more appreciating these things about his heritage. And so learning some of these prayers and things. And you can see that in this film where Herschel and Ben have had as immense a falling out as you can get. Herschel actually impersonates Ben by shaving his beard. And Ben gets deported and sent back to where they're from.
That's right, yeah.
And it's very gotcha. Silly. Yeah. And so Ben is just abandoned and he's in this desolate place and he finds the one place of refuge is a synagogue. And they immediately accept him in, like, oh, you're Jewish? And so they accept him in and they're like, okay, let's say these prayers. And it's the same prayers he didn't learn early on in the film. And he's sitting there and they're reciting and he just talks to him next to him and he starts sharing about his loss, about his parents died, and he starts to cry. And Herschel appears there, they reconcile. And there's a big spoiler in the movie where Ben has been working on an app called Beep-Bop or Boop-Bop. Boop-Bop or something stupid.
Which I thought was clever because what is it? The reason Gwyneth Paltrow calls it Goop, her company Goop, is because the person who she talked to about making a company said, well, all the big name internet companies have two O's in them. So you got to make a big name company with two O's in it. So she picked Goop. And so I thought Boop-Bop was probably picked yeah. because of that, because of.
Or TikTok.
Yeah, there's something about like that. There's like, it's like a rhythm to when you say it. Facebook, Twitter,
Hulu,
Yahoo. Anyway, so I thought the Boop-Bop thing was funny, but Google. Yeah, there's this spoiler about it you're getting into.
Let's name all the social medias while we're here. But
we have to change Syndoc to like, I don't know.
Boop-Bop.
Bible 2. When we release Bible 2, we'll change it to like
Booble. It's called Booble. Booble.
The internet Bible translation. That's the millennial or Gen Z version, whenever that gets it comes out. It's like, what, every 30 years a new translation takes off? It's NIV for my parents, ESV for us.
And those translations get retranslated themselves. Yeah.
New King James seems to be the big one now. Message really tried, but the Booples
is where it's at.
You heard it here first.
Like John MacArthur is actually doing his own translation, and it'd be so funny if it was like John MacArthur releases Booples.
only available on the Google Play Store or something like that to protest Apple. That'd be awesome. But you were saying boop bop. Yeah.
And Herschel understandably is like, that's stupid. He doesn't get it. This is terrible. And then he goes back to that family album and he finds a picture that Ben made as a child. And it turns out that he used to call his mom and dad a boop bop, which is like very cute. And so he realizes that, and he goes back. He's like, I realize that family is important to you. And it's sort of this thing of like, though our generations differ in how we remember these things and commemorate these things, that thread is still there and family is still important to you. And you wanted to honor them in your own way. You wanted to have a you wanted your success to reflect that. And we see, you know, throughout the film, and there are, again, these great nugget of moments where we see Ben watching old video where he's graduated from college, and the start, and it's sort of a question in the movie a little bit. It's like, okay, this guy is just working on an app for 5 years. How can he afford his apartment? And it turns out that his parents actually gave him the money to start his own little business.
And they have a sweet line too, where he's like, I don't know what to say or what to do. And they said, I think the mom says, we could name it after us. And then it cuts away. And I was like, oh, I wonder if boop bop is like something you say. And then it pays off. And there's some good setup and payoff in this movie. I was noticing. I was watching, I was like, oh, I should record this. But then that would mean sitting up because I was laying down in bed. So, right. But yeah, they have really good narrative setups and payoffs. Good job, Simon Rich. Some good writing here.
The structure is there. Like, the outline of the screenplay is great. It's what they chose to fill the bit in. That's kind of disappointing. And even like the very last scene of the film is essentially, so early on, Herschel's wife takes her into her favorite place, which is Little Pond. And then it's one of the like five or six things that made me laugh is it's like, I want to take you to a special place. And it cuts them in the same position, but now there's like all these plants and there's like a pipe going into the pond. And he's like, this is beautiful. And so Ben deadpans, yeah, she had great taste. And, the other, this is the final joke that made me laugh, is early on when they reconnect in the synagogue, Herschel takes off like his glasses and hat and goes, it's me, Herschel. And Ben goes, I know, because of course they look exactly the same.
Yeah.
So there is all the laughs in the movie. You've heard them in this podcast, at least the ones that made me laugh. But and they have a great moment. They talk about, and they actually do the same thing where Ben is like, can I share something with you? Promise not to laugh, which is a conversation that Herschel had with his wife. And they resolve to, you know, from the beginning of the movie, you assume that the ending, once he starts the pickle business, is he's going to do the pickle business, and then Ben's going to handle the like an internet app for it or something, and that's kind of how the movie ends. But they decide to have the family business, and they're reconnected as a family. And so, like, all of that, that is a great story, and that is a great emotional arc for the film. It's very satisfying, and there's parts of it that, you know, I'm not going to say, like, I cried during the movie or anything, but these are emotionally impactful, strong moments.
It's endearing.
It's very endearing. It's endearing. It's very there's a sweetheart at the center of this film that, and I kind of wish there was a little bit more. Like if they had had maybe two or three more scenes that really expounded upon these themes just a little bit better, like a couple, maybe one or two more conversations where Ben and Herschel sort of talk about the differences in the way that modern Jewish culture has evolved. And maybe a few more scenes of Herschel like encountering the more like multiculturalism of the day and age outside of him just saying offensive things on Twitter, like sort of him reconciling the way that like a character, someone like Ben would have, like maybe he have adopted different aspects of faith, or maybe he doesn't believe in God at all. And maybe confronting those things maybe a little more head on would have been stronger, but then you might have lost the more whimsical, like easy watching element of the film.
Right.
But the movie's only 80 minutes. You could have added 10 minutes of scenes and it would just still be a completely acceptable runtime. So yeah, overall, those are the things that maybe endeared the movie to me more than, I don't know, the wrong Missy might have or something, you know? So yeah. I would never, there's 40 million Sandler, Spade, Kevin James, Netflix movies that all look the same, all probably are this. What I'm saying is, like, the comparison is more just like there's all these like comedies dumped on streaming that are just made in trash. Assembly line. Yeah. You could there's the whole thing of like Netflix having a shuffle button. You could apply that to the scenes in these movies to make a new movie out of all these different movies, and it'd probably be the same movie, you know. versus something like this, where there's a little bit more to it. There's a personal story here. There's like things and themes and ideas that obviously mean more to Seth Rogen and his writing and production partners than like Adam Sandler's movie.
Taking his friends on vacation.
Yeah, where he's hanging out with Jennifer Aniston again or whatever right. The movie is.
Hey, I like Murder Mystery. I thought that was fun. That was Sandler and Aniston. I thought that was pretty
funny. I'll take your word for it because I'm never going to watch it.
I only watched it because I saw that there was a fair amount of people who were like, hey, this is pretty good.
Is it good in the sense of like, it's good on the scale of Adam Sandler dumping movies to streaming, or is it good in a general sense?
I think it's good in a general sense when I watched it. So I'll just kind of leave it there. I mean, it's a murder mystery I think it's handled well. And him and Aniston are just fish out of water people that are like, what's happening? We just came here because a friend said we could come. And there's something kind of fun about that. So murder mystery, pretty good. I'll put that in here. We should cover it. So then you can tell me I'm wrong.
Get a guest host for that one. I'm not doing murder mystery.
All right. You have to make a decision here. Murder mystery or the wrong Missy. You got to choose.
I mean, I could just not do either.
You could just quit the show.
Yeah, I'm permanently just doing trailer talk. That's what's going to happen. The kind of one of the conundrums the movie brings up is this idea between you are a part of this by heritage, like where like almost like you can passively be part of the faith, and versus like Christianity, which very much is like you need to follow God, as Kanye West said, and you need to like the theologian of our times.
We need Christian talk, God talk,
Jesus talk.
That's right.
I'm sure by the time this episode comes out, he'll have tweeted 40 more ridiculous things that completely make Jesus talk look silly. But
try and get him to tweet about us.
That'd be awesome. He just tweeted like a verse from Romans the other day, though. So sometimes I'm like, Kanye, you're right on, dude. Like, he's on fire right now. And then he's tweeting about how like Othello is his new favorite game over Connect Four. Twice. He tweeted that twice. So I was like, oh, good to know what's going on with him.
Keep praying for Kanye. Praying for Kanye.
But circling back, it's like Christianity is not a religion that you can passively be a part of. You know, you can't, just because your parents are like, just because your parents are Christian doesn't mean you're Christian. It means that your parents are Christian. And at some point in your life, you have to make a conscious decision to follow the Lord. And so that's sort of like, it's interesting. For me, it was just interesting seeing this idea of like Judaism is not just, it is not necessarily just a belief system. It is part of your heritage. It's in your DNA. It's part of who you are. And so embracing that aspect of his identity is sort of part of Ben's character arc in the film. While in Christianity, like that's not, like we certainly have identity in Christ, but that's something that you have to consciously choose to follow. And so there's an element where I can see that in Ben, where he has to consciously choose to re-embrace parts of his own heritage. But with us, there isn't this sort of like caked in, almost like obligation of that. Like you have to have this revelation of God on your own. You have to encounter the one true living God and choose to follow him.
Well, for Ben, it's cultural.
Yes,
like it's really a cultural admittance to his history and heritage. Whereas in Christianity, it's a totally new culture. Entire belief system, how I function, what I think about, how I try to think about things is entirely to this totally different belief. It's from non-Christian to Christian. It's not really like I'm born in a Christian family and then I can kind of believe some Christian stuff and then pick and choose. That's just not how it works. You can't pick and choose what you want about Christianity. You can wrestle with things that you might not like about Christianity. That's a good thing. You should wrestle with things that are challenging to your belief systems. I'm honestly really not bothered by talking with Christians who struggle with certain things right now, because one, Satan kind of picks and chooses things that he likes to tempt us and false theologies to affect people. And two, people need to wrestle with those things. In fact, I can express a lot of Christ-like patience in that. I mean, I was thinking about earlier today about how Jesus, the Lord at the Last Supper, outright just directly says, like, one of you will betray me, and it was better that you have never been born. But then he also kind of whispers to John, like, watch, this is the one who will betray me. And he commits like one last like like what he does at the table in providing wine and like serving Judas at the table is incredibly loving and can be kind of seen as almost this like last attempt to keep Judas from going out and selling him, which he does right after. He steps out and John describes it as the book of John describes it as like Judas steps out into darkness, because there's this constant light and darkness for John about like, if you're in the light, it's like Jesus. If you're in the darkness, you're without Christ. And so somebody wrestling with certain faith points and beliefs and theological standpoints as a Christian is very different to just being a Christian who's like, yeah, I believe in Jesus, but the whole like, I don't know if the resurrection happened, because then you don't believe in Jesus. It just immediately Jesus just stops working if he couldn't be resurrected. Your entire belief that like the Lord has sent someone to die for you and will bring you back up doesn't work if the person who dies for you doesn't come back up. And I'm picking an easy one there, but it's not like we're talking about American Pickle to start talking about homosexuality or forms of baptism or abortion here. But maybe someday we'll cover a movie that offers up that conversation, whether or not you and I feel comfortable or ready or prepared for that one, Daniel. But yeah, you can't pick and choose it. It's very different. Whereas in the end of this, it's sort of like Ben's arc, dramatic story arc throughout the film is being a little more connected to Judaism, which makes sense because, you know, cinematic doctrine, we like to emphasize that movies are more than just themselves. The credits are not the end. It's very clear, like through our discussion here, it's like you watched an interview where Seth Rogen's like, yeah, I'm thinking more about my heritage. And it's very clear this movie is exactly that. It's almost like an artistic expression of him working through it with a lot of pickles and brine and salt. Yeah. And so, but you know, as Christians, we don't get that luxury.
Can I throw a hot take in there?
Ooh, is it like a real hot take or is it a funny hot take?
Oh, it's a real hot take.
Oh, okay. Let's go.
I don't know, but I think modern Christians have a lot in common with Ben in this film.
Oh, yes. Yes. You and me included in that.
Yeah. It's interesting because Ben has in a lot of ways achieved the life that Herschel always wanted for his family. He lives in relative ease. He has all these nice things. He has all the seltzer water he could ever want. But that comfort and that level of just like ease of access to things, not having to worry about food or money, one of the main things that has caused Ben to drift away from his Jewish faith.
It has calloused his interests and heart.
Yeah.
Like part of faith systems is looking outside of yourself for security. And I don't think it's wrong to say that that's part of Christianity. So it was Psalm 50. The Lord is like, when you're in your time of need, come to me. And so yeah. Part of it is this gift of security. And it's not just that the Lord, the Israelites are the Lord's people. It's also that I will be your God. You'll be my people. And when you get comfortable because you can make seltzer water whenever you want and you can go out and what is it? The whole app that he's making is so you could see if a company's ethical or not. So it's not even worried about finding things to survive. It's about making sure you're buying from companies. You have the luxury to choose from multiple companies to sustain
which
yourself.
Herschel is like, what are you talking about? Like,
that's dumb. Yeah. Which it, you know, it isn't. I think it's actually a big deal. In fact, it's so much of a big deal that Acts has an entire section about it. You know, the meats that are sacrificed to idols. How do you feel about it? And the end of the story is Paul says, if it'll hurt your brother, do not eat the meats that are from somebody sacrificed.
I think we all have forgotten in some ways where all of our sources of joy and provisions come from. Like all good things come from the Lord, and he is the one that ultimately provides. But because we're in such a place where we've had the luxury of putting God in the back burner and just take for granted the things that we have so much access to and all the things that are the people before us, they had to struggle to maintain their identity, their faith, where they came from. You know, my grandfather was a child of the Depression, and his first house didn't have like indoor plumbing when he lived in. And so but even just three generations later, I'm so far removed from that where, you know, I can't even, I'm trying to sit here and fathom what that would be like. And I can't because I've been so coddled in this way.
I showered this morning. And then when I went for a walk in the humid heat, I showered again for this episode. I am very comfortable. I'm very, very comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's just what's happening this day. And you're talking about things that happened in your family history to get you to this point. I went to a private school, a Christian private school for my senior years, for my senior high school years. And one of the best chapel segments we had, so every Tuesday there was a chapel session. It took up a period. We went into the school's chapel and there was a sermon. It was really wonderful. And I was looking forward to it. Part of it is you get a break from school and the chairs were comfortable enough for that. But then it was also really good feeding time of just the word. I go, you ready for your Tuesday feeding time? And so anyways, it was like this one session I always remember is this guy chronologed like the history of like, and he did it implicitly. You didn't know this is what he was actually doing, but he went from like Adam through the Old Testament to the New through Christ to the New Testament and churches all the way up to the culmination of the school I was at and talking about this baton that's being passed and then just charged us sitting in the chapel and said, what are you going to do? You're going to take this baton. What are you going to do? You're going to run. And like, it was just silence because you're sitting here and you're like, oh my gosh, there's been so many saints have committed so much work to get this building running, to own this place, to have us have this wonderful opportunity to learn about Jesus and the work that he's done, to learn about the church and the work that's been done and the provisions of the Lord, only to kind of like what I just joked about, look forward to chapel because it's a break from education. And it's very convicting. And I regularly think about it. In fact, I think my school has these on YouTube, so maybe sometime I'll dredge it up and share it. But it's you don't really think about it a lot. It's very myopic.
Yeah.
And part of it might be because Ben's home doesn't have a lot of photos of his family around. You know? I mean, I think I'm trying to think about me. I have a photo of me and my wife on my desk here. She has a photo of her family and her parents' wedding photo, actually. And then in our bedroom, the only photo I think we have is I'm Melvin Benson V. So I have a whole lineage of Melvins, actually, that are all Melvin Bernard Benson. And we actually have, I think it's a profile of the Melvin and then their wedding photos next to it. So we actually have each one, which is actually really wonderful because you can see different physical traits that track through each one into me. But that's about it. And you think, what if I had more photos of my family around? Would I be more mindful of the commitments that they've done? Let alone do we even think about how much our parents have done to take care of us. It's really, it's interesting. It kind of goes to show the effectiveness of this film's commentary on family. It just kind of gets bogged down with the whole SNL stuff.
Yeah. I do have pictures of my wife and I on our apartment walls, but next to my bed is a framed poster from BoJack Horseman. So I don't know what that says about myself.
I have a poster for the video game Doom behind me. I have a Luke Skywalker Coca-Cola print that's I think my father-in-law saved. I actually do have another photo of me and my wife, and it's us on our first year of marriage, and then a bunch of movie tickets that we took. That we have now, we have digital tickets, so we can't do that. So it's actually kind of nice, but that's us. That's not our family.
I probably have more pop figures in my apartment than I do like relatives living or dead. So I think if there's one thing I want to leave the listener with, in light of everything we've talked about, in light of this movie, it's if tomorrow they were to open up some pickle tub of some kind and you know, one of the martyrs of our faith would come out of it, or someone like Martin Luther or Augustine, or
that's what John I want. Calvin. Look who's back to Electric Boogaloo, and it's just Martin Luther. That'd be sick. Yeah. He'd be so mad.
Tyndale, look, well, that's what I'm saying. And they came to your house and saw what you were doing, and after all the sacrifices they made for the faith and to preserve the scripture and the people of God and to ensure that the church existed now, what would they think of how we are spending our days and our time? And that's something that I think about semi-regularly in light of, you know, I'm going to seminary soon, I'm trying to work at my church, do interning, and it's like there are so many things we could do with our time. And I understand that I'm saying this on a movie podcast that we were doing, which is arguably sort of the height of free time and pleasure.
2020
and,
free time millennialism. Yeah.
But, you know, when what am I doing to further to take that baton of building the church and building God's kingdom after all the sacrifices, after 300 years of martyrdom, after everything that the people that came before us sacrificed to do, if they could see what we're doing now, like, what would they think? What would their assessment of the current state of the church and how we are, what we are doing with this? We have all the advantages that they wish they had. We have all this communication, all this technology. We have ample food and provisions. There's nothing really holding us back. We don't have to worry about immediate food scarcity, or as much as we feel persecuted, maybe sometimes over certain things, like we could go out and I could go out and share the gospel with somebody without fear of death. And with none of that holding us back, what are we doing? And I think that is certainly something that I did not expect to get out of an American pickle, but that's something I thought of.
Flick. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I thought of.
Thanks so much for checking out this episode on An American Pickle. Now, if you've seen An American Pickle, what did you think of it? Did you think this film was a satisfying comedy, or was the SNL-style humor cumbersome and annoying? If you're listening on Cinematic Doctrine's website, let us know in the comments below, or shoot us an email to cinematicdoctrine@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving a review for the podcast in your respective podcast app at the end of this episode. Unlike YouTube or Reddit, there isn't really a way to let us know how we're doing with a thumbs up or thumbs down, so the best way to leave your thoughts on the podcast is to write a review on iTunes, Podchaser, or wherever you listen. And as mentioned before, Cinematic Doctrine has a Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you're opted into a once-a-month movie poll where you decide a movie we discuss in the podcast. You also gain access to The Pre-Show, a Patreon-exclusive podcast series where my co-host Daniel and I casually talk movies, Christianity, and life itself. There are other unique benefits that come with supporting the podcast, so be sure to check that out at patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine. A special shout-out to those who supported the Art House Theater tier on Patreon. Thank you so much, Mom, Dad, and Melanie. You guys are the best, and your continued monetary support is greatly appreciated. All this will be available in the show notes. Until next time, stay cool. Want some Cinematic Doctrine swag? You're in luck! We've got 3-inch Cinematic Doctrine logo stickers exclusive for Patreon supporters. Perfect for your travel mug or laptop. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine, link in the show notes, and choose the independent theater tier. Doing so will net you other perks too. But let's be real, the podcast stickers are the coolest perk. So get yourself some podcast stickers by supporting on Patreon.